Whether you come to order and can we do a roll call, please?
Oh, yes, I need to record. Juan, yeah, it looks like Juan, you started recording.
Yep. Should be right now.
All right, great. Okay, so representing Ward 1, Commissioner Mark Rodriguez. Doesn't seem like he's here. Representing Ward 3, Commissioner Lydia Hunter.
Here.
Representing Ward 4, Commissioner Brian Andrews.
Here.
Representing Ward 5, Chairperson Robert Clark.
Here.
Representing Ward 6, Vice Chairperson Lois Pollack.
Here.
All right, and we do have quorum.
Has everyone had an opportunity to read the minutes from the September 7th meeting?
I've read those, and there was a correction made to Section 5, where it refers to American Rescue Plan Act funding. It's initially referred to as APRA. That's been corrected to ARPA. And having read that and with that correction, I would move that we approve these minutes as accurately reflecting that which was discussed on September 7th.
Do I have a second for the motion to appeal to approve the minutes as amended?
I'll second that, Lois Pollack.
Can we have a roll call?
Commissioner Hunter?
Aye.
Commissioner Andrews?
Aye.
Commissioner Clark?
Aye.
Commissioner Pollack?
Aye.
The minutes are approved.
Number three on the agenda is a staff update.
I believe we have Vivian here with us to do a staff update.
Yes. Yes, I do. So Joyce couldn't be here today, was called into a last-minute meeting. So what I'll do is quickly just give you an update of what Business Services is up to. So we are working to close up the annual comprehensive financial report for fiscal year 22. And we have the auditors working on doing their part. We also hired a consulting firm to work on consolidating the document for us. So that is going to be probably another few weeks where we get everything wrapped up and ready to put together a presentation to Mayor and Council with hopefully the auditor's opinion. We're also starting to talk about the fiscal year 24 budget development. We're working on a five-year projection that we will be presenting to Mayor and Council here soon. What else is going on? We are recruiting for a business services director. As you know, Joyce is currently the interim business services director. Outside of that, that's pretty much the highlights of what's going on in business services.
Any questions? Hearing none, thank you very much.
Sorry, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. This is Commissioner Hunter. I just had a question. When you said you're hiring a consultant, are you saying you hired a consultant to draft the annual comprehensive financial report? Is that what you were saying?
We hired a consultant to help us put together the document, meaning they took our fund financial statements and put together the entity-wide financial statement along with the notes that go with the basic financial statements. And the reason we did that is We are, we just completed our, not completed, but pretty much went live with our new ERP system, the Workday system. So we had a lot of staff member, key staff members working on that implementation. So what we did is we contracted that work out to the new consultant, and the name is Ed Bailey.
Okay, so you haven't done that in the past. This is new because of staff resources?
Correct. We have not, but with the Workday implementation, which is a huge lift, it's a big deal, big project. Mostly all of our staff members were dedicated to the validation of data and testing of data in the new system.
Got it. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Are there any other questions? Thank you.
You're welcome.
Ms. Pollack, do we have an update from the Code Enforcement Commission subcommittee?
Yeah, just a quick update. I did just finish the another draft of the audit report for the Code Enforcement Subcommittee, and I sent that over to Leah. I see she sent it out in today's email to the other commissioners on the subcommittee, and asking for also another meeting just to go over the new draft and see if we can wrap that up. So hopefully we'll get a date available in November, if not early December. And we should be approaching the end of that audit here. And being able, the next step after this would be after the subcommittee reviews everything and get a couple of fact check things checked, we should be able to submit that to the entire IAPC for review. I don't know if there's any other questions.
Any questions? Thank you, Commissioner Powell. Senator Archibald, I think you're up.
Awesome. All right.
Share it. Start that process for you. All right, is everyone seeing the PowerPoint? I just shared the screen. Lydia or Lois?
I'm actually on my phone right now, so I can't see it right this second, but.
Okay.
Well, I am sharing it.
All right. Well, I want to, number one, thank everybody for inviting me to come in and participate in today's meeting. My name is Tony Archibald. I'm a lieutenant with the Tucson Police Department. I've been employed with the police department since June of 2005, so 17 years and change now. I recently was reassigned to our Human Resources Support Section. That is a function of human resources processes that includes our recruiting unit, our backgrounds investigation unit, and general support to our VSD folks that are on loan to us as satellite employees that do our human resources functions within the police department itself. And so today I just kind of was asked to give you guys a little bit of an overview and discuss some of the recruiting efforts that are going on with the department. Some of the things that I'm looking at as I move forward is still kind of a little new in this this position, and what we're hoping to accomplish here in the next year to couple of years, because as I'll explain, unfortunately the recruiting process for police officers, specifically that job classification, is quite the involved process, and so we wanted to make sure that everybody had a good understanding of what that looks like. I've been a lieutenant for about 2 years now. I was assigned to this section back in July. I've had a little bit of time to see how things are working, see how things aren't working, implement some changes, and make some suggestions to also improve things in the future. So the first thing I want to do is introduce you to our Tucson Police Department recruiting unit. If you're able to see the screen, you'll see that there are two pictures up there. That's Officer Melissa Ayun and Officer Angel S. Barras. They are my two full-time recruiting officers that work for the Tucson Police Department. They are assigned directly to me, meaning there's no in-between the officer and the lieutenant rank. If you're familiar with how the police department structure works, generally speaking, lieutenants do not have officers that are their direct subordinates. Usually we have a sergeant position or some kind of supervisor that would oversee them. We don't have that structure set up within the unit as of now. That is one of the things that I identified very quickly as a problem with the way we're looking at recruiting. We talk about how recruiting needs to be our number one focus, yet we've invested nothing in it. Two officers to try to staff a department of over 1,100 people just isn't feasible. And so you'll notice that I've included our plans to expand. I want to add a supervisor for the recruiting unit. Traditionally, what the Tucson Police Department does when we want to add a supervisor to a unit is we go out to our field supervisors, our sergeants, and we say, hey, come out here and become a sergeant in this unit, and we're gonna make you our recruiting sergeant. I find that there are some issues with that. Number one, usually those people have absolutely zero background in what it is we're asking them to do. Number two, it turns out that there are people that go to school for many, many years to learn recruiting, marketing, and all kinds of good stuff that works with doing exactly what we're trying to do, and they have that expertise already built. Number three, it just seems silly to me that we can expect that a police officer is the jack of all spades, the jack of all trades there. And so my thought process is, let's go after someone that has an established career in this realm. Let's invest a little bit of money in them, and let's bring them in with marketing experience, recruiting experience, and let them tell us what we're doing right, let them tell us what we're doing wrong, and focus on it, making those improvements. In addition to having our two sworn officers, because I do think there is an important component of going out to these recruiting events and seeing a sworn officer that you can ask questions to, we notice that there's a deficiency when we're advertising our professional staff jobs. Our community service officer, I'll start referring to them as CSO here and there. You may be familiar with that program. It's kind of unique to the Tucson Police Department. We were one of the first in the country to institute a position that is a not sworn person that goes out and responds to calls for service that aren't of an emergency nature. So nothing that is going to put them in danger, but they do respond to our traffic collisions, clearing the roadway for us there. They do respond to burglary, shopliftings, and a myriad of other calls that otherwise would require a sworn police officer. And we look a lot at the movements that have happened across the country in the last couple of years, and one of the things that I think sticks out to me about the community service officer is we got a lot of critique thrown at police departments across the country for always sending a guy with a gun to handle jobs that didn't necessarily require it, right? We've been doing this for years. We've been sending people that don't have guns, they're not sworn police officers, to do these things that we didn't need sworn police officers to do. So kind of an example of our agency leading from the front on that. The other thing I want to do is hire... yes, sir.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, Mr. Commissioner.
Do you use the community service workers on mental illness cases?
No, not typically. The community service officers themselves don't have any specialized training to deal with that. And at this point, we have started to integrate some social worker with co-response with our sworn officers. But there still is a little nervousness about pulling out those sworn officers in those situations that can be very volatile very quickly. And we don't want to lead, you know, these employees in to a situation that could potentially put them in harm without the sworn component there to assist and back up if need be. So the community service officers, though, to answer your question directly, do not respond to those types of threats.
Thank you. Sorry to interrupt you.
Not at all. The other position that I'm looking to add is a social media specialist. Again, we're looking at a professional staff member for that. And again, the reason I'm saying that is because there are people out there that understand more about the ins and outs of running a social media platform than any cop can ever understand. Right now, Officer Espadas is my social media guru. And the reason he is that is because he's the youngest guy in the unit. He has used it since he was 16 years old. He understands how to upload these videos and the TikToks and the whatnots, and more so than I ever could. I'm almost as bad as my mom getting on the Facebook and asking her how she's doing every day. So that's why we're looking at expanding the unit. Here's the why we need to expand the unit. This is just kind of a quick outlay of what we're dealing with as far as the organization. Tucson Police Department currently has 1,096 employees, and that was as of a weekend change ago. Of those, almost 1,100, we have 37 sworn police officers, and that includes everybody from the guy riding around in the patrol car on the midnight shift to Chad Kazmar, our chief of police. At every rank, 737 of us all the way up. We do have 64 officers that are currently in our training pipeline, and so those would include our academy folks that are going through basic training currently, as well as the folks that have graduated from basic training and are currently in field training. And we do specifically not count them as our sworn personnel, because they have not demonstrated that they can ride as a solo police officer. And so one of the things we like to illustrate is that they are not an officer right now because I couldn't send them out on the street by themselves. As soon as I can do that, I take them out of that 64, I add them to that 737, we make it 738, and we're happy to add them there. But as of right now, they're still in that training. They need that.
May I ask another question?
Absolutely, Commissioner.
Is there an attrition rate you have on these people in the pipeline?
We do. I'm not going to give you the specific number, but I'll illustrate the last two academy classes. In the last two academy classes, we've set between 27 in this one that is currently in place, and we had 28 in the class before that. Next Thursday, we're graduating 21 of the 28 that started 5.5 months ago. So we lost seven. Tucson Police Department recruits. Of the 27 that started just a couple weeks ago, we're down to 19. So the attrition rate is a little misleading, and one of the things that I'm really trying to find out is what we can do once we've asked these people to join us to be part of the thing, why is it that they're washing out? And one of the things that we noticed is six of those folks washed out of our current academy class. Six of those folks washed out within the first week of actual training at the academy. Right after they were asked to participate in some physical training, running a mile and a half, and generally before the push-ups started. So we currently, as an agency, do not have a physical test to get to that point of the academy, meaning you don't have to pass a mile and a half run. You don't have to do any amount of push-ups to make it through the hiring process. Traditionally, we have had those responses, and traditionally, our attrition rate at that first week has been significantly less. And so I question the idea of, if we're not telling people that this is a physical job ahead of time, are we setting them up for failure once they get to the academy? And so we're working with our analysis division because they're the folks that can crunch numbers a little bit better than I can. And they'll be able to evaluate whether or not we had more success before We instituted a physical standard. If we had more success when we had a physical standard instituted, or whether we've had better success since that has been alleviated. I tend to think, and this is anecdotal at best, I tend to think that by installing some kind of physical assessment before they make it to the academy, it will ensure that they're more successful later on.
Thank you.
Absolutely. So we do have 50 of our community service officers that are out there right now. We have an additional 41 that are currently in the training process. And so that's going to bring that total number up to 91. The 17 of them just started the academy 2.5 weeks ago. That CSO academy is an 8-week training process now. We just increased the amount of training that they get because we realize that we're going to start asking a little bit more of them as far as the calls they go to. If you're not familiar with the basic training program, that's 25 weeks of basic training that we are currently giving our police officer recruits. And then after that, they go through at least 16 weeks of field training as well. So that's riding with another officer, learning how to apply the knowledge that they got at the academy to the actual field work. In addition to all those folks, we have an additional 204 support staff members that do various functions throughout the police department. That's going to include our folks that are our redaction specialists, our records folks. It includes our administrative assistants that are the secretaries that are our patrol divisions. All the way to the chief's assistant is included in that number. And so a very good mix of people that make up the Tucson Police Department. Nearly a quarter of our workforce is that professional staff. Our authorized strength number, I'm just going to throw that out there. Currently, the city council has authorized the Tucson Police Department to have 867 sworn police officers. And so just with the numbers that you see there, we're basically 130 officers down from where the council has allowed us to be.
Excuse me, I have another question.
Yes, sir.
Among those employees, do you have anyone on the 9/11, on the emergency response phone banks and things?
No, sir. The 911 communications dispatch center is all the public safety communications department. So all those folks are a separate department, completely different from Tucson Police Department. And so the Public Safety Communications Department, the Tucson Police Department, and Tucson Fire Department all make up the tri-arm of public safety here in town. We couldn't do it without them. They couldn't do it without us. And it's really a perfect triangle of how public safety works with those three departments. We do supplement them a little bit. So we do have officers that work overtime shifts to go in and take 911 calls. We found this to be particularly impressive for reducing the number of calls because a sworn police officer can handle somebody that's in crisis on the phone while it's going on and maybe even negate the response of a field patrol unit to go out. And so we have had officers that are working down there in an overtime capacity, but we don't actually employ any of the dispatchers, the call takers, or anything like that from communications.
And the communication between the three branches of the public safety section, I'm asking this because I recall being in New York during 9/11 when the fire and the police could not communicate, and I'm wondering what the level of communication is in this area.
So the level of communication in this area is outstanding, and it's because we're on a network that's called the PCWIN, and I apologize, I forget what the acronym actually stands for. It's the Pima County, and I know it's Integrated Something Network. ultimately, what that means is my radio and the radio from the guys on the TFD ladder trucks actually talk to each other. We can switch between frequencies and communicate directly with them. Just like I can switch frequency and communicate directly with the Pima County Sheriff's Department, with the Marana Police Department, with the Oro Valley Police Department, with the Sahuarita Police Department. And so we can all be on the same network and actually on the same channel, as opposed to, I know one of the major failings in 9/11 was relying on patching of networks to go together. And inevitably you're going to have patching failures. We don't have that here because the officers and the firefighters can actually switch their frequencies to communicate directly with them. They're built into the radios themselves. So, and funny enough, I'll just get in anecdotally again. We utilize that ability without the need to have a major high stress emergency. And what I mean by that is, I could go to a call for service and need to call meds. It's what we call when we're asking for TFD to come out and do a medical evaluation. And so, while they're en route, something can have changed. I can actually flip to their frequency while I'm sitting there and tell them, hey, don't come to the scene. It's no longer a secure scene. Whereas previously we'd have to wait for my dispatcher to communicate that to their dispatcher to communicate that to them. I can actually just flip to their frequency really quick and let them know it's no longer safe to come in. So, that's how that is working in the field basically every day right now. I kind of wanted to go through a little bit of our hiring processes, what we've done, what we've seen. The police officer recruit process, and I put in the parentheses there, is 22-3. That was the academy class that recruit process was for. That opened on March 28th and closed in May. We had 300-plus people apply. 178 of those people that applied met our mandatory minimum standards. That's MMS, meaning they have the right to be a police officer in the state of Arizona. Now, the Tucson Police Department does not establish that standard. That is a standard that's established by the Arizona Police Officer Standards and Training Board, commonly referred to as AZ Post. They set the minimum standards, and so there's drug use, there's criminal history, there's a whole myriad of things. There is medical components that you have to meet to meet the minimum standards of being a police officer. Of the 178, 71 actually passed our test, and then we seated 26. I think I told you 28. We seated 26 in the academy on September of this year. Oh, that was the second process. I'm sorry. I got confused. So we seated 26 in the academy. It started in September of this year. So I'd just like to go back and show everybody. We opened the process in March, and I didn't start the academy until September. I applied the first day it opened and got a job offer and started it in September. It is a six-month process, give or take, for us to get a applicant to an academy. That's a product of having to conduct civil service tests, selection meetings, background investigations. We got to send them to polygraphs to make sure that they're completely forthright with the information. And then obviously there's a medical screening that goes on as well, and a psychological screening that is required to go. The next process that I'm going to highlight there is Police Officer Recruit 23-1. That opened just back here in August, not too long ago, closed in early September. We had 300-plus apply again. We had 162 meet our minimum standards. 73 passed the testing process, and we haven't done the selection meeting on that yet. And so, again, that just kind of illustrates how long this process takes from start to finish. And so we're hoping to get a class of, I'm going to be optimistic here and say 30. I don't know if that's upwardly optimistic or if I'm right on pace there. We are currently in a CSO, or a community service officer, process. That opened back September 19th. It closes next Monday. So if you know of anybody that wants to be a community service officer, they still have time to apply. I am the recruiting lieutenant after all. I have to plug that in there. We have 50 applicants so far for that job. We just got approved through the supplemental process more personnel for that position. because as it stands currently, with the numbers that we had last year, we're actually at our maximum for community service officers. So the chief of police went to the city manager and asked for additional personnel for that that position, and that was granted through the supplemental budget processes. I do have police officer recruit 23-2. It will open in a couple weeks here at the end of the month. And it is for a May Academy. So again, you're looking at that 6-month turnaround, and that was just something that I wanted to illustrate as we move forward there. So here's a little bit of how successful we are when we get these people to apply with us. So over the last 3 or 4 processes, I took the numbers, and we're averaging about 325 applicants. 200 of those on average will pass our pre-screen employment questioning. And again, that's designed to eliminate anybody that has absolutely no chance of meeting the minimum standards with Arizona Post. You might have remembered from the previous slide, we were running about 125, 100 and something that met that minimum standard. That's significantly more than that. That's because we try to eliminate them, and then Arizona Post actually comes through and says, nope, not that applicant. So we invite roughly 100 people to test with us every process. Of those 100 that get invited to test, 85% actually make it through that testing process and make our certification list. That is a civil service certification list, so they're actually on that. That gives us the opportunity to put them through a background, put them through a polygraph, put them through a medical examination. Of the 85 that make our cert list, generally speaking, 25 will be offered a job in the academy. And so I broke down the percentages. 65% of the people that apply make it to pre-screen. Of those 65%, 50% get invited to the testing. Of that 50%, 85 make it to the certification list. And of that 85, 29% actually get offered a job. If you add that all up, that gives us a success rate of about 7%. For every 100 applicants we get, we're going to get 7 out of it. And so that's kind of a little discouraging. We're going to try to focus our efforts on the people we should be recruiting and try to get that number a little bit better and all.
Lieutenant Archibald?
Yes, sir.
How does that success rate compare with perhaps other departments to give you guys an idea of TPD versus Phoenix Police or someone like?
I feel like that's an interesting question, and I don't have specifics for you off answer. I do know that our application rate is about on par with a lot of agencies of our size. Our academy rate is about on par with a lot of agencies our size. Whether or not we are trying to fill as many positions, or maybe we're trying to fill more, that I don't know. And I think that's something that it deserves a little bit of exploration. That's something that I can probably report to you guys back in a future meeting, perhaps, with a little assistance from my analysis division. Because getting into the ins and outs, one of the things that we have to understand is that recruiting for the Tucson Police Department, which is the 33rd biggest city in the United States, is going to be different than recruiting for the San Jose Police Department. And San Jose is only slightly bigger than us, right? Like, because they have a different hiring or a different staffing level right now than we do. And so they may not need to hire as aggressively as we need to hire. They may be capable of handling much more staff than we are. To get into the ins and outs of that, it's always a little bit of a misnomer for me. So I don't have a specific answer for you, sir. But like I said, in a future meeting, I'll try to gather some more information for you.
Hello.
Excuse
me. This is Commissioner Mark Rodriguez. I'm sorry. I've been listening. I was a little late, and just introducing myself. I'm from Ward, the West Side, and I have a couple of questions, officer, and if you could just take a little time. First of all, I really support you guys. I know it's a tough job. specific questions that I have is on retention. It was my understanding at one of our other past meetings, they said that keeping your officers was a difficulty, was difficult. They would go to other surrounding communities. And I'm a little concerned about that because it seems like the Tucson Police Department is a recruiting bee hive for officers, and then they don't stay, and they go to surrounding communities like Oro Valley, Sahuarita, Vail, different areas, and we lose them. And I'm very concerned about that because as far as the city is concerned, in saving money and saving our assets, those assets are you guys. And my concern is you're recruiting people that will eventually leave to surrounding localities. And I'm just not very on board with that. That's a loss of a lot of money. And that is city money. And I'm concerned about that. The other concern I have is that city and fire department don't have to be residents of the city. That concerns me from a community service being part of your community. If you're way out in Oro Valley, how are you going to be dealing with the west side or south side? How are you going to have any special indication? Fortunately, this last week, I saw a program on TV where you're actually in the schools, which was excellent, talking to elementary kids and showing them the human side and not to be afraid of police. This is in low poverty areas, high crime areas, and I think that's an excellent step. So I think you're making great progress. So numerous questions I have for you, officer, but I see that you have a graph up here of your breakdowns. And one of the concerns I have by race is that you do have representation, but that's of your total police force. That's including clerical. So it's a little misleading. How many actual officers, police officers, not clerical, are further broken down by race? I would suggest you do that. And what is the percentage, I'm wondering, of your police officers leaving? Thank you.
Okay. Excellent question, Commissioner. Thank you very much. The attrition rate of our sworn personnel right now is averaging 8 a month for the last 12 months. Now, if you take that 8 a month and you're realizing that I'm hiring 25 to 30 for each academy, you're like, but wait a second, aren't we just breaking even every year? Actually, we're losing officers every year based on those attrition numbers. And absolutely, Commissioner, as you mentioned, this is alarming to us, and this is a problem within our organization. Other agencies in our surrounding area are willing to pay their police officers more, and I will tell you, it's not just that they're willing to pay them a little bit more to start. The bigger problem that we're having as an organization is that they're willing to pay their officers and continue to give them continuing salary increases, progressive pay. When I got hired on in 2005, I was, I'm going to use the term, promised progressive pay. I was promised a steps system that was in place. At the time, it was a 7-step system where every year with an adequate performance evaluation, I was going to receive some kind of increase in my salary. It was fairly modest most of the time, 4.5 to 5%, I think, is what it was at the time. I received exactly one of those in 2007 after, because my probationary period didn't count. But after I got off probation and had 1 year of service off probation, I got one of those. And then those step increases froze at that point and were not instituted anymore. The Tucson Police Department and the City of Tucson has given their employees increases since that time, but it has been when the city can afford to do so. And I understand that there were some tough financial times in that period of time I don't think that anybody discounts that. But we have failed our employees by not reinstituting some kind of progressive pay model going forward.
Does that mean?
Go ahead, sir.
I didn't mean to cut you off, sir. Sorry. I was just on that point wondering, is this sort of like a detriment to keeping? Because if surrounding communities can pay more and offer, step increases faster and more, is it a problem of the funding you're getting from the city? Or is it other of that and other factors? Because I'm totally not into defunding the police. I think what has to happen is a better allocation. And also, my concern is the policemen or even the academy members should know that they should possibly live in the city. You got all. If they're living outside of the city, they're going to want to get to their community, and they're offering them. So we're just a feeder for the surrounding communities, where, you know, it's a turnstile of, you know, you bring them in, you lose them. And that's terrible. That's losing money. And that's not good for you guys. It's not good for the community. So that's a big concern. And I want that addressed. The other concern I have is making sure that you're protected in all you do. We've been very aware of school massacres, shootings, Gabby Giffords, all that, and they seem to be an increase. And a lot of this increase is from alt-right domestic terrorists. And I stress that. We're fighting for a democracy right now. I'm never going to minimize that. And as a veteran, and my father a veteran, third generation Arizonan here, I am not going to let that happen. And it's very important that other Americans realize we're one America. And what's unfortunate is people start blaming this and that, but coming together and supporting our staff and the school districts, school educators, police, and maybe a better handling of the police allocations.
May I interrupt for a moment?
Go ahead. I'm not finished with my time.
We have the lieutenant here. I'd much rather have us direct questions at him rather than give...
Okay, then I have a direct question then. What are you all doing as a police to assist us in trying to get these concerns of ours approached? Should we go to the city, ask for more funding? Should we do further analysis? That's one question. The other question is the background of these police recruits. I was very alarmed that some of the January 6th and other ballot watchers and other people that are intimidating are past veterans and also law enforcement. So how are you screening out these alt-right individuals from the, to be in the academy and also in our police force?
Thank you for the question, Commissioner. I don't know if you were on the line when we were discussing our success rates with applicants, and so I'll deal with the background kind of question first.
Yeah, and I heard it, sir. I did hear it.
Okay.
But I'm just asking for
Just to put this in perspective, of the 85 people that make the certification list, I mean, there's a minimum standard to get to that certification list. We offer 25 people a job. That means that 60 people that made that certification list, something in their background tipped, and we will not offer them employment with the Tucson Police Department. I said that we have 130 vacancies. If I was willing to step over that, and just accept anybody, I could fill those vacancies in a heartbeat, but I don't think that they'd make good police officers. I don't think that they'd serve the citizens of Tucson the way that you and I know I want our police officers to serve us. And
yes,
so
sir.
we just don't offer them a job. And that's the easy answer for what you're asking about how our background process is in tune. I'm going to go back to, I think that your question about our demographics here. I do apologize. You are absolutely correct that you are absolutely correct that that demographic breakdown at the bottom there, that is of the entire police department. I have been using utilizing this this new dashboard that's getting developed by our analysis division. Unfortunately, it did not give me the option to do the filtering for just police officers. I can assure you the next time I appear before you guys that that will have the ability to do so. Because I want to know that too. I really do. I think that we're doing quite well in our demographics as being representative of our community. I will say this. I think that we have work to do still. We obviously want more people of color, and we want to be just as inclusive as our community here is in Tucson. The reason I put this particular graphic up is I wanted to illustrate that the Tucson Police Department is actually a part of a nationwide movement in the law enforcement community to get to a point where they're calling 30 by 30. And the idea of this 30 by 30 is to have 30% of our TPD sworn staff members be female by the year 2030. Across the nation, police forces are sitting at 6% female. That is simply not acceptable. We're at 16%. And I'm going to say something that may not be popular with my police department. That is simply unacceptable. We need to do better than that because our demographics and our community, we need to be almost mirror images of them in every way, shape, and form. Race, sex, sexual orientation, all those things have to be representative of everybody that we protect in the city. And that's just a basic fundamental of the idea of police legitimacy. And we know that as a department. I can say that with a lot of admiration for what Chief Magnus, former Chief Magnus, did for our agency to progress us along. And I know that Chief Kazmar, our new chief of police, is going to carry forward with those progressive policies to ensure that we are on the forefront of being the most inclusive police department that we can and representing our community the best we can.
Thank you. I just wanted to understand more specifically, sir, my question about in your background checks, individuals that have possibly alt-right allegiances or who have been involved with that, the election deniers, all that. That's very important. And I was wondering, do you have any information regarding how in your recruitment or in your checking applicants, if you check into, I know you check into mental health issues, possibly alcoholism, drug use and all that. How about their online use, social media, and what are you doing in that area?
Excellent question, Commissioner. Yes, a thorough social media scrubbing is a part of our background process. We're actually looking at partnering with a company that can do that kind of through a software program. That would make it a far more comprehensive search. As it is currently, when applicants come in and are interviewing with their background investigator, they are required to provide to us their social media. We do ask them to allow us access to that, and the background investigators do spend quite a bit of time going through each candidate's social media to get a perspective of what they're looking at. At the same time, if a candidate denies to us that they have a certain social media platform and we later find that, that is an untruthfulness issue and they are automatically permanently disqualified from ever being a Tucson police applicant again.
Very good. Thank you, officer. I have no further questions.
To get back to my question, in terms of trying to recruit more female officers, Has anyone looked at the program for outreach to determine whether or not it's effective in reaching the intended goal?
Yes, sir. As I had mentioned, the 30 by 30 initiative is a function of a nationwide movement. We've gotten the best police leaders from across the country that just also happen to be female to give their perspective on what is effective in recruiting, retaining, promoting, and really driving the idea of females can do this job. And in a lot of cases, females can do this job just as good, if not better, than their male counterparts. I know that. As I mentioned, 17 years now, and some of my best times on this police department have been with female partners that keep me from opening my big mouth and getting in trouble because they are the calmer force. They can prevent a physical altercation from happening. And the mentality of police being this macho world has really changed, and not just from a an internal perspective. And I think our biggest challenge is that we've got to convince the public that that's not policing anymore. I was talking to a recruit that's going through our academy process now, not too long ago. He is about a 5'6" individual and probably weighs about 157 pounds if we put all the gear on him. So he's a little fella, and he expressed to me some concerns about, you know, being smaller statured in this profession. And the funny thing was, I was able to point to another officer that looks just like him and say, this has been a great officer. And, you know, he was my backup for, you know, three years out on the west side of Tucson. And we ran around together. I could point to three female officers who, were smaller than him that were great officers, better than I ever was as a police officer, because they had abilities that I just didn't have. And what we're really focusing on with that 30 by 30 initiative is taking those success stories. We have two female assistant chiefs working for the city of Tucson right now. We have to utilize that to our advantage to let people know, not only can you do this job, you can be extremely successful. You can rise to the top of this organization as a female, and you can have a family, because that's, believe it or not, that's one of the things that really hits against us as a profession is, well, if I want to be a female police officer, I can't have a family. Assistant Chief Duffy has children. They're adult children now. Don't tell her I said that. She's going to insinuate that I meant she was old. sorry, Dan, if you watched the video. she has children, and she raised those children while being a Tucson police officer. Melissa Diane, our recruiting officer, she's a single mother of three. And she's done that for the last 15 years. And her youngest now is in high school. It's possible to do, and we just have to, as a organization and as a profession, really illustrate to the general public that it's able to do, that you're able to do it. And I think that as soon as we start capitalizing on those successes that we've had as a profession, I think that you're going to see that those applicants will increase.
This is Commissioner Pollack. I have a couple of questions.
Yes, Lieutenant Archibald. Ahead.
Yeah, Lieutenant Archibald. It is a common practice for years on end for the fire department to go to a city where they can be accepted into the academy and then move to their dream job. So I can only assume that cities that need to hire a lot of officers for TPD, for instance, are going to attract the same types of people who want to be an officer, but they just may not want to be in Tucson. So my question would be, have you explored or are you exploring having these people who sign up for the academy sign a contract that says they will work for the city of Tucson as an officer for the next X amount of years, 3 years, 5 years, whatever it is, as kind of payback for allowing them to go through the academy. Because you are doing them a service, and it is costing tens of thousands of dollars apiece. So what is the drawback to doing something like that, and is it being explored? So that's one question I have. And I know we're in dire need of traffic enforcement, and only the motor officers are doing traffic enforcement. Has there been any consideration given to hiring other cities to rent their department motor officers for, some type of assignments? So I'm not saying that you would hire the person independently. I'm saying that you would contract with another city, Oro Valley, Marana, whatever it is, the sheriff department, to pay them to have any of their excess motor police to come and do motor enforcement, because we have zero almost. And this has been going on for so many years. We can't afford it anymore. We have such a high incidence of killing pedestrians and killing people and speeding, racing on the street and everything. We can't just keep saying we're going to have more officers. It's too slow. So question number one is about requiring that the officers sign a contract that they knowingly, when they sign up to come into the academy, that they will stay here for a few years, similar to what the military does if they put you through school. And then the second question would be farming out motor officer help to other cities. So what can you tell me about that?
Excellent question, Commissioner. So the commitment to our agency, I'll tell you this. We have explored the idea of necessitating that you stick around for X amount of years after you've completed the academy. Other agencies have done that around the country. Overwhelmingly, those agencies have found that it hurts their recruiting because their neighboring agencies will use it against them and say, why would you go work for a place that makes you an indentured servant? And so we feel that the idea of instituting a mandatory, you have to stick around this many years, is actually going to hurt our recruiting efforts and not necessarily increase them. Getting into the motor agency. Go ahead, Nancy.
But let me just comment on that. You said you've got over 100 people applying. You have to look at what the numbers are. You can't just say carte blanche, this doesn't work across the country, because some places are not looking to hire very many officers. Other places are looking to hire more officers. People can't move right now readily from one city to another because you can't buy a home. They're not even available. And so right now, you know, there may be certain times in time where that is going to be applicable. Besides, maybe you should ask the recruits and not just be sitting, you know, inside of TPD thinking these through and saying, no, that wouldn't be feasible. So you have to ask the marketplace. Everybody's doing it. They're doing it with doctors. Do you want us to put you through law school? Okay, then we'll do that, but it takes, you know, this much. You want to be a pharmacist, CVS and Walgreens willing to put you through pharmacy school, but you have to work for us for X amount of years. It's not an unheard of thing for an occupation. So I would really question how you guys all arrived at that decision, because you can't just be sitting behind your four walls coming to that conclusion. So I would hope that you would honestly, you know, you would hope, not you personally, you know, but the department would give some more thought to that and really start looking, because the city that is desperate enough to open up the hiring and have enough slots open is going to be the one they're all flocking to so they can go through the recruiting process and get it over with. Because once you get it over with and go through that, you know, whole process of being hired and everything, you are so hireable. You are marketable to any city you want to go to, is my guess. And so I just kind of, you know, talking about what the other commissioner said, and that, you know, you've got to capitalize on these people. We need a commitment You know, so maybe they can't all live in the city of Tucson, but we need a commitment to the city of Tucson. So anyhow, okay, sorry about that. You were going to go on to the next one.
Yes. So as far as contracting with other agencies, I mean, obviously, I think that that's something that could be explored. The question has to be asked, what's the benefit to the other agency to allow their officers to come into the city of Tucson and enforce traffic in our city? Because I don't see what that would be.
Well, money. You're going to pay them because you're just hiring temporary personnel. I'll tell you, the city of Oro Valley is so much better at traffic enforcement than the city of Tucson. And so you've got that reputation already. Everybody knows when they drive on Oracle, and as soon as they cross the line there and you're in Oro Valley, you better not be speeding. You know, that's always been their reputation. And so I can't imagine that if we didn't advertise that we are, you know, using resources from Oro Valley, of course they have to follow City of Tucson rules and regulations and everything, laws. But people might start to do a little waking up. But I don't know, because we're really behind the power curve in motor enforcement. And, I mean, you talk about hiring patrol officers and everything, but what about the motor officers? We had a lady hit and killed crossing the street in a 30-mile-an-hour zone by a hit-and-run driver. I don't think they found her. And there's nothing happening. It's like commonplace now. Every street you turn, there's somebody being run over and killed probably once a week now. And it's not doing any good. I mean, I just saw two drag racers on my 30-mile-an-hour Pima Street the other day. I was out at the curb. Fortunately, I didn't get run over. But there's no motor enforcement, period, zero. We don't see anything. And if you had zero enforcement, what, you know, so I'm just concerned about, what's your plan for motor enforcement and increasing the number of motor officers?
Absolutely. Excellent question, Commissioner. We currently have 20 motor officers that are assigned full-time traffic enforcement. In addition to their 40 hours a week, we have many state-funded grants through the Governor's Office of Highway Safety, where they do go out and work overtime deployments in addition to their 40 hours. Many of those officers work 50 to 60 hours a week with those grant-funded overtimes. The point that you made about the high number of deaths, you're absolutely 100% correct on that. As you may be aware, in the year 2021, the city of Tucson had the highest level of traffic fatalities that we have ever had. And I'm here to tell you, we're going to beat it this year. I like you, am appalled by that. And you know, you mentioned that you're on Palo Verde, and I think that you and I have had some conversations actually when I was assigned to Midtown over there. Do we have enough motor officers? Absolutely not. Are we wanting to staff that with more? Absolutely. But we do have to make some decisions on that. As you may be aware, Chief Kazmar made the decision to reinstitute our motor unit as a full-time traffic enforcement squad. Before Chief Kazmar took over, our motor officers were splitting their time on their motorcycle and answering calls for service while working a patrol squad. So Chief Kazmar has invested, albeit kind of little for a city our size, he has invested in the idea of traffic enforcement. We have a lieutenant that is in charge of our traffic section that includes not only our motor officers, but our DUI unit and our traffic investigations detectives. And they're the ones that are investigating these vehicular homicides, like you mentioned, the hit and run from your neighborhood the other night. And so we have a lieutenant that oversees that. We're trying to use some evidence-based approaches to get in there and really dig deep into why these are happening, where these are happening, and be smarter about how we deploy our officers. One thing that I would mention is, yes, you're absolutely correct. When I crossed the line driving on Tangerine into the town of Oro Valley, I make sure that my speedometer is set at 45. I actually turn on my cruise control because I don't want to get pulled over by Oro Valley police officer. And I know that they have the time to do it. That is the main difference between the city of Tucson and the town of Oro Valley. Their officers, be it a motor officer, be it a regular patrol officer, have the time to do discretionary enforcement, like traffic enforcement. Our police officers, we've got a lot of them running around out there. Unfortunately, they're on higher priority calls for service, and they just simply do not have the time to be doing traffic enforcement when they're responding to major emergencies. And I know that's not a great answer, and I apologize for that, Commissioner. I know that it's a frustrating answer because it keeps on coming back to staffing. The second that we get to our 867 officers, I guarantee you, we go back up to 40, 50 motor officers in this city. Because our chief of police is a big believer in vehicular traffic enforcement. He was a motor officer for a portion of his career, and he has expressed to us how important it is to him that we reduce that number of fatalities in the city of Tucson. So I definitely feel your frustrations on that, Commissioner.
Well, I appreciate the answer. He unfortunately said that when he first was commissioner, and it's almost been it's been about 10 months now, and there's no change. But that said, it is very much the trend across the U.S. that people are getting killed at a higher rate than ever. So I don't know if motorcycle skills are part of your recruitment, but if they're not, you guys should be looking at how many people are you hiring and putting through the academy that have motorcycle skills, because you can't just take them off the street and teach them how to ride a motorcycle. You know, that wouldn't be effective. Anyhow, thank you very much for the responses.
Yeah, absolutely, Commissioner. To your point, funny enough, the Tucson Police Department, if you want to become a motorcycle officer, we don't care that you have any previous experience on a motorcycle. It wouldn't matter if you were Travis Pastrana, the greatest dirt bike rider in the history of the world. He would go through the Tucson Police Motor Certification Course, which is a 5-week intensive course that includes both. I went through the first 3 days of it. I'm not a motorcycle rider, first and foremost. I went through the familiarization portion, which can get you a motorcycle endorsement for your license. The state of Arizona has certified our motor school that the first 3 days of our motorcycle school gets you a motorcycle endorsement on the license is how good this school is. But I went through that, and the first 3 days you're basically pushing people around on the motorcycle. It's a little comical to watch, but they start at the very beginning, and they do teach the person that's never been on a motorcycle to ride a motorcycle better than people that have been doing it for 20 years. And I'll give the example. Unfortunately, this example's bad because he is actually now an Oro Valley motor police officer because he worked for the city of Tucson and lateraled up to Oro Valley. Hanamichael was an officer here with the Tucson Police Department that was widely known as one of the best motorcycle officers we ever had. He participated in our motorcycle competitions, and in addition to just being an outstanding traffic enforcement officer, he was actually really good at riding the motorcycle as well. Before he went through Tucson Police Department Motor School, he had never been on a motorcycle. So we can train that technique. It's not much different from the person that's never fired a gun. You don't have to have fired a gun to be a Tucson police officer. We will teach you the skill. We will make you, we will get it to you. It's not any different than being an undercover operative. I was an undercover operative for a couple years. I had never bought drugs, before I went to the undercover squad, and it turns out I was pretty decent at buying drugs. So we have some outstanding training. I promise you that. And I hope you can appreciate my levity just a little bit on my joke. I'm not trying to make light of your question at all, ma'am.
May I interrupt for a moment?
Yes, sir.
Lieutenant, how much is left of your scheduled presentation?
I believe I have two more slides to get through here. So I was just going to talk a little bit about our hiring efforts, what we're doing on a day-to-day basis. Again, I remind you that this is with my two full-time recruiters, and then I have administrative responsibilities, so I don't get to get out to these events. We do job fairs, community events. If it's a Tucson police event, like a trunk or treat was the real popular thing in the last couple weeks, there's a good chance that there's a Tucson Police Department recruiting footprint at those. We want anytime we can come together with our community to, for them to understand they can be part of us being part of their community. We're really trying to invite our citizens in. We've got 11 events scheduled for November. I would have brought my recruiters with us today, except they're actually up at Grand Canyon University talking to some criminal justice students in those programs up there. In addition to their day-to-day and all these things, they also do candidate outreach. They contacted over 137 applicants that at some point in the process they had lost something, dropped a ball, not answered a question on one of our forms or whatever. And so we go through email, texting, phone calls. It's a full-time job in and of itself for our recruiters to keep up with those. And then they're also managing our social media platforms. I use the big three of Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram there, but also job hiring applications like Handshake, Jobs.com, Indeed, all the big ones. We have some kind of footprint on those hiring platforms as well. And so what can you do as the commissioners, and what I'm asking at least for a little bit of help from is spread the word. The city of Tucson's a great place to work. I've worked here for 17 years. I've loved every minute of it. I've had the opportunity to do a lot of different things. We can talk a lot about the other agencies, and I'm going to focus in on Oro Valley real quick. So I will tell you, Oro Valley makes more money than the Tucson Police Department does. Oro Valley has a progressive pay scale in place. And in 9 years, you'll start at the bottom, and in 9 years, you'll be at the top of their pay scale. We currently have employees that have been with our agency for 21 years as officers that are not at the top of our pay scale. That's a travesty because, as one of the commissioners alluded to, there is an investment in these people. We estimate that it costs about $100,000 from the second they apply to us to the second that we hand them a badge at the end of the academy, that we invested as a city and as a community into these individuals. That's $100,000 a piece in instructor time, in equipment, in training, and not to mention their salary. And so we're spending $100,000 for every person we ask to come through the door. Oro Valley is giving 9 increases over the course of 9 years to the tune of $3,000 an increase. Does anybody see that that's a math problem that we can solve? I'm no math magician, but, pun intended there, but I know that we can do better as an organization. We can invest, continue that investment so that we don't allow $100,000 to walk out the door for a job in Oro Valley. Because the only reason that those people are leaving here is because it's better paying. They know what their future looks like here. I will tell you, the Tucson Police Department has better opportunities. We just need to match it with salary.
Question.
Yes, sir.
In line of what you just said, isn't there a point of diminishing returns? I mean, how many police officers can Oro Valley afford to hire and the other places around? Isn't there a limitation to how much they can leech out of the Tucson Police Department?
Absolutely. And that's a great question. I would venture to guess it's probably about 4 to 5 a year that a town like Oro Valley can afford to come in and snag from Tucson, because they have an authorized strength as well. Unfortunately for the town of Oro Valley, they usually float right around their authorized strength. For a town like Marana, they could probably afford to come in and grab 4 or 5 police officers from the city of Tucson. Well, I just took 10 officers from the city of Tucson. I'll tell you right now, that's 2 patrol squads in any one of our patrol divisions. There are 5 officers per patrol squad. So I just removed 2 patrol squads in 1 year for a matter of, $3,000 per person for a year. So that's $30,000. I'm trying to do the quick math in my head. $30,000 a year, and we could have kept them here. It seems to me that we should explore some kind of way to entice our officers to understand that we value them.
And the math is that $30,000 over time.
Absolutely. And it is compounding, and that's a great point to bring up. It does compound. And so $30,000 this year means it's $60,000. Next year means it's $90,000 in the third year. But remember, to replace one of those guys, it costs us $100,000. So I could keep those 10 guys here for 3 years at the cost it takes me to replace one of them with that $100,000 in training. So, I know that I'm biased in this because obviously I wear the uniform. I've been here for 17 years. I've gone without raises. I'm not here to complain about me. I make good money in my position now. But I understand the frustration. I understand the lure to a young officer who's been here for 3-5 years, who maybe is just now getting on our SWAT team, and he's looking at Oroval and he's like, the guy I went through the academy with makes $8,000 more a year than I do, and he's getting a raise next year. And I understand that mentality of looking and going, maybe that's a better option for me. And unfortunately, those are the people that Oro Valley are grabbing. They're grabbing our greatest. They're grabbing our best and brightest. I gave you the story of Officer Hanemichael. He was one of the best to wear the badge on a motorcycle. Absolutely. And he went to Oro Valley. And so the question's got to get asked, why? Why? If he had everything he wanted here, he was a motorcycle officer here. He's doing the same thing up there. Is it a money issue? Is it a way that we look? I'm not here to answer that. I apologize if we kind of got off what I was really here to do, which is tell you about the recruiting efforts, what we're doing, what we're hoping to do. And I know that that we've kind of gotten off topic here and there, but if there's other questions, I'm happy to answer.
Yes, I have a question.
Yes, sir.
This is Commissioner Rodriguez again. Thank you for your presentation. Regarding recruitment, the whole physical nature of a recruit, what do you suggest if they're not in shape? If they are aware at the academy that they got to do this, is there a way that the academy works on that, or should potential recruits know this, get in shape before they go into the academy?
Yeah, absolutely. Great question, Commissioner. I'll say this. So we had moved away from a pre-hiring physical standard. And so this is a relative recent development, and I think the idea at the time was let's cast a wider net, and we'll bring people in, and we'll see if we can get them through the process. Unfortunately, that's proved to be not a very successful metric for us, because this very academy, the junior class that's out there right now, we lost 6 people on day one due to a physical limitation. I'm not here to tell you that we're asking the world of these people out the gate. We asked them to run a mile and a half, and people couldn't do it. I think that it's important that our police officers have a basic physical ability. I'm not saying that we have to be CrossFit athletes or anything like that, but it is a physical job, and the city has a vested interest in making sure that its police officers are somewhat physically fit to go out there and perform the nature of our work. Now, that being said, our academy is coming out to our testing processes now. The academy is letting people know these are the physical standards that you have to meet ahead of time. We're showing them a video of previous recruits going through and seeing what it is that they're going to be asked to do. And then they're being provided with some information. And they're getting this, you know, basically 5 months ahead of the academy. They're being given it's actually a pretty popular program online. I followed it at one point when I decided to run a 15K. It's called Couch to 5K. So they provide them with this pamphlet of information on how to build up your fitness so that we're not asking for the world all at once. And then they're also providing some nutritional information to make improvements to the diet. Now, ultimately, that's incumbent upon the candidate to follow through, and while they're in that hiring process, that long 6-month endeavor of being hired. And so we're hoping that we're getting the right candidates. But unfortunately, I think that some of the information we're seeing is that a lot of people think that they can come in and just squeak by. And the truth is that that's not going to cut it to be a Tucson police officer.
Thank you, officer. This is a requirement. Being in the military as a veteran, we had to do at least a mile and a half. So it's good that hopefully you stick to that and bring that back. But thank you very much, officer.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Lieutenant, thank you for your presentation.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Very informative. And definitely we'll see you back.
All right.
Do you want to call the next?
Number six on the agenda is the internal audit quarterly update.
Oh, do I need to adjourn that? Where do I do that at? Eject device. Unable. Hold on.
Oh, it might want you to close the PowerPoint.
Probably does. Sorry. Try that one more time. All right, thank you. My screen. So for the quarterly update for internal audit, the first quarter of the city's fiscal year, July through September, and I'll go through this. So some of the internal audits projects in this time under the consulting services. Ongoing since August 2020, internal audit staff is providing assistance to the team evaluating the city's new ERP system. That is Workday. Workday did go live in October. Internal audit has also been providing support in training employees, the effort of training all the city employees on this new software, and in the launching of Workday. So for business services, ongoing since June of 2022, internal audit has been providing assistance to the team identifying and evaluating all of the city's databases, data sets, and our various technology tools, and just where we are housing all of our information. For information technology, ongoing since June of 22, internal audit has been providing assistance to the team that is researching and identifying software licenses, making sure that all of the softwares we use are properly licensed for our use. For parks and recreations, ongoing since June of 2020, internal audit is reviewing the structure, design, and operation of the youth programs. And for the Office of City Manager, ongoing since August 2022. Internal audit is providing assistance for the Prop 407 program in administrative and financial areas of that. So for the commission support in the first quarter, the staff provided support and facilitated three regular meetings and two subcommittee meetings. And then under assurance services, under compliance for the city clerk's office, internal audit performed a review of boards and commissions and the compliance with open meeting laws. Under city contract administration, for the Department of Transportation and Mobility, ongoing since May of 22, is the street furniture advertising contract. That's the one we do have a little more time to discuss later. For parks and recs, we have completed the flooring, the review of the flooring services at Clements Center. Under inventories,
For the first quarter, citywide, we have completed our analysis of inventory, warehouses, and storerooms. And for Department of Transportation / Tucson Water, we completed an audit to review DTM's use of Tucson Water's Nebraska Street Yard. Under payroll, ongoing since September of 22, we investigated a complaint regarding overtime and pension contributions. And that is all I have for our first quarter updates. Are there any questions?
Apparently not.
All right. So let's see. Stop sharing again. I'm kind of clunky here. And next, we have, our discussion on street furniture. I'll share that one as well. Do you want to take that, Commissioner Clark?
Where do we stand then?
So the commissioners were all sent this report that the internal audit did, providing an assessment of the City of Tucson contract with AdVision for our street furniture advertising. And the commissioners had just asked for some time on the agenda today to discuss this, if there were any comments. Just a quick reminder, this contract is coming to an end, so we are at basically end of contract conversations with that vendor.
What does that mean? Is it up for renewal? Is it?
Chairman Clark, members of the commission, this particular contract was a long-term contract. It is at the end of its life cycle. It is not up for renewal. It was renewed at the 10-year point. It's on the second half of its 20-year term. City of Tucson, as a practice, doesn't enter into that long of a contract anymore. So this one ends in March of next year. So we're in the final 5 months. The services provided in this contract have been redesigned and written into other contracts that are existent or will be taken on by city staff. So this particular contract isn't going to be renewed in any way, shape, or form.
Have any of the commissioners any question?
Well, I have a question, and it just has to do, it seemed like the preponderance of the analysis and findings was non-compliance throughout that whole contract by the contracted firm. Did that result in any, I guess, sanctions, or is it instrumental in not issuing a contract to that same firm, or is that firm eligible to bid on another contract, albeit perhaps a shorter duration contract going forward?
May I ask an addendum on that question? And that is, you said it was renewed 10 years ago. Was the situation changed in that second 10 years?
Commissioner Andrews, Chairman Clark, thank you for the questions. Yes, so internal audit became aware of this contract as we were looking through long-term contracts across the city. There were a handful of long-term contracts that traditionally would have a contract manager at a department level overseeing the compliance and benchmarks of the contracts. But periodically, the internal audit should also kind of review that to make sure there's at least a second set of eyes outside of a department level to look at. When we looked at this particular contract, it's been a handful of years now, so it was after the 10-year renewal piece. When we looked at the department annual reviews and the renewal review, We found a lot of the issues were being brought up on a periodic basis, the same issues that we found in the contract. So it looked like these issues were well-known over time, with promises from the vendor that they would come into compliance or a variety of reasons why they couldn't meet their performance metrics during whatever period of time the reviews were held. When internal audit got involved, we made sure that our reports went to city management, well documented on the specific areas that they are out of compliance. We tried to draft those reports with specific details of exactly where they're out of compliance on the contract terms and conditions. When we looked at the department level reviews, it was more of a general comments of where they could improve instead of maybe holding them a little bit more accountable to specific terms and conditions. During the handful of years that internal audit's been involved, we've had the little bit more serious discussions with the vendor. We've also employed the management at the department level, which are on top of the contract, city manager's office, which is the internal audit piece, and the city's attorney office, drafting legal responses back and forth. To be direct on the question, there hasn't been any sanctions. There's our recommendations that the contract be terminated. There are termination clauses in the contract and what that would entail. There's been recommendations to put the vendor on notice that they are out of compliance with the contract to meet our end of the requirements to exit out of the contract. And those have been met with legal discourse back and forth. So currently, the end goal is the services need to be provided to the community. Whether the contractor does it or not, we want to make sure that the service standard that we wanted to have with this contract was being met. So when the all the non-compliance issues were brought out and aired out, we decided that the Department of Transportation has the ability to fill in some of those gaps so that the public gets serviced the way they should. So hopefully over the last year, hopefully the community has seen at least a slight increase. Maybe they've seen city staff out cleaning the bus stops. Those are kind of the efforts we put in until this contract is at the end. So we're at the end of it now. We did pursue, was there enough cause here? What would need to happen for a vendor to be disqualified from applying for future contracts? We spoke with the procurement department, went over the issues in this contract. They said there's nothing really there that would preclude them from doing future ones. And just like any other RFP or bid process, they are eligible to bid into it. And hopefully the evaluation committee then would evaluate properly and pick the most qualified vendor for whatever that service is. In this particular, if you notice in the report, you'll see the bid that went out and what was promised was things like the bus stops will be, the actual physical assets of the bus stops will be sprayed off, washed, sanitized. They'll be wiped down on a periodic basis. We were promised that they would be pristine, basically. So sometimes vendors promise things, evaluation committee buys into it. If city staff is not diligent on holding people to their terms and conditions, what we wanted was something great for the community, and what we have is what we have.
The more important question is not so much the contract, but we have two separate oversights, the management and internal audit. And I understand that internal audit got involved sometime during the second half of the contract. Is there some reason why that wasn't put on earlier in the...
Yes, Commissioner, Chairperson Clark, members of the Commission, great question. Yes, it's reviewing the contracts is one piece of our audit plan basically every year. With the limited number of staff, we can't hit every piece every year. But when things, we try to hit them on a rotating basis. When they looked at contracts, just in a general sense, previous to my time with internal audit, this one didn't come up. There was another long-term contract. that was with building maintenance, I believe, of some sort. I can't remember if it was cleaning like floors or if it was just general maintenance. That was the oldest contract at that time. That's the one that got picked for review. But then once it's on our radar, so even though it's something that we would only periodically check in on 5 years back or so, when we picked this one to see and we saw that there's issues, now I've been involved with it every year on a support role and on an evaluation role. So once it hits that criteria that we realize, here's one we picked, then it's ongoing. So it becomes more frequent, our reviews of it. And we kind of support the department too. Really, they're the lead on it. They have to make the decisions on what their department's going to do. But as internal audit, we try to stay very closely tied to that department to help guide them on whatever support they need. Because again, they're kind of overstaffed. Sometimes they have staff reviewing contracts that don't have the skill set to look at financial statements or things like that that a vendor might provide. So we try to provide that service or tie them into the other city departments that have expertise.
And obviously there were some legal discussions, and apparently there was not any suggestion of recoupment or penalty for failure to provide services.
Correct. Currently, no. The legal discussions are still ongoing, especially as we're at the end of the contract, because there's terms on how the contract ends. So I don't think I can speak about it because they're in like the active negotiations now. But yes, those topics have been discussed.
This is Commissioner Pollack. I think maybe at some point in the future, if the IAPC might consider an audit of the supplier or service provider selection and reevaluation criteria and how it's actually done. Because if they select, they should be having some reevaluation of these suppliers done every, you know, some reasonable time frame, every 2 years, every year, whatever it might be. And this isn't the first supplier or, you know, contractor for the city that has not delivered or maybe cost more than they bid or something. And, you know, you really do kind of wonder what the process is that they're doing. I know we had the Pima pedestrian path installed by a lot of contractors that the city hired, and they didn't follow the plans for planting. And so it made probably a 50% mortality rate in the plants. And when you ask them, okay, why weren't they following the plans that cost another probably couple hundred thousand dollars? Oh, well, we can't watch everybody. That was the response from the TDOT project manager. And so if we're not hiring contractors and evaluating them, we're doing a disservice to the taxpayers because we're just wasting money. But, and I know for a fact that the AdVision, or whatever they're called now, that's the bus stop people, they haven't done a very good job, unfortunately, but they bit off more than they could deliver, because they were supposed to maintain like 6 feet around the bus stop. They've barely been able to pick up the trash. And I can say they don't even do that very well. So I have spent a lot of time just in my 1 square mile reporting my bus stops for trash and graffiti and gum on the seats and, you know, all kinds of things. And again, we shouldn't have to be reporting that because AdVision was supposed to be going there on a regular schedule to service, you know, all that. So anyhow, my suggestion would be maybe keep an open mind about possibly doing an audit of the supplier and contractor evaluation and reevaluation processes and see if there's even any data being collected to use for those processes.
Anyone else on the commission want to step in on Commissioner Pollack's suggestion?
This is Commissioner Rodriguez. I agree with that point. I was just wondering, the city official there mentioned it was a staffing issue, that there's just so much that you could do. Is that a major part why maybe this is not happening as fast as possible? Do you have a staffing issue?
Commissioner Rodriguez, members of the commission, thank you for the question. With internal audit, we have two staff auditors for the city, and we have an audit plan. So we have certain items that are kind of standard items that we try to review on an annual basis, but we also get more immediate concerns that might come up through other processes that need to be looked at a higher priority level. What I can tell you on this particular one, so this is a contract. Contract oversight is not solely internal audit. We just periodically check in on certain processes around the city. So the contract oversight on this is a responsibility of the department, which kind of is delegated out from the procurement department. So the procurement department is over top of contracts. They designate staff-level experts on particular contracts that are then tasked with kind of the contract oversight or contract management of those particular items. When we looked at this contract, this was a long-term contract, again, ones that we don't get into currently, but it did have annual reviews that were completed. It did have a 5-year renewal or 10-year renewal review, where at the 10-year mark, it got evaluated again, and then the extension was awarded. We found those to be being done on a regular basis, so it was being monitored every year. So it's tough for me to say why the contract was being monitored. Issues were being documented, but yet the contract continued. So it wasn't that staff wasn't monitoring. They were monitoring.
Any other comments or questions?
Thank you for that clarification, sir.
You're welcome.
That being the case, I'd like to move on to item 8, future agenda items, and I think Commissioner Pollack's comments relating to the last subject are appropriate under future agenda items. Commissioner?
Yeah, I'd like to propose that we have a future agenda item to get some background information on what the processes are for the evaluation of contractors or suppliers for newly bid contracts or new contracts, and what the reevaluation process and criteria is for existing contractors, and if there's actually data that's being collected. So as people have complaints and things, how does that get recorded? And how's that being tracked? And like Aaron was saying, if it's up to the a certain department, whoever needs that contractor to monitor it, then we'd have to go to possibly a couple different departments to find out how they're doing that. But I would zero in on, well, I don't know. I don't know if it would be just this one, just this contractor, or get a sample. But this one might be a good one to look at on how they did that, because maybe there's some flaw or some lack of reporting system or something that could be improved or something that would bring more data. Because I know I personally saw email from the ward office a year or so ago saying, you know, nobody thinks there's any problems with AdVision. Please call, you know, SunTran and voice any concerns that you have about the bus stops and everything. And so we started doing that. So I don't know if there even is a good method. But anyhow, that would be my suggestion to look at that as a future agenda item.
Commissioner Pollack, I think the key word that you presented was looking into the processes.
Commissioners, if you would like maybe an informal voice vote, and I can try to get somebody from procurement into a future meeting to do a presentation about general contract negotiations.
if that's something the commission would be interested in hearing.
Yes. I think it's not about contract negotiations. It's about selection of the potential contractors and re-evaluation.
Contract procurement process.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's a little pointed, because if you bring somebody from procurement in, they might just want to talk about, you know, how they write a contract, you know, and we'd be more interested in how you're selecting someone for that contract. So, yeah.
Okay. About the proper person to bring in to speak to that issue.
Do you have any other comments?
I was wondering if we could have an update on the vacant positions for the commission. The mayor is still vacant, and also Ward 2.
Let me interrupt for a moment. I think we want to present that, but Commissioner Pollack has made a suggestion for a future agenda, and if there are no other comments, I'd like to put that to a vote.
Well, I do have a comment. I wonder if audit staff can give us an idea of, to narrow the focus, what types of contracts should we be looking at? For instance, Department of Transportation might issue a single contract for building the bridge over 22nd Street railroad tracks, and it may be a defined duration, have a single contractor with no clause for renewal of any sort. So we probably don't want to know anything about that type of contract. Is there other types of contracts that would be of interest to this commission where there are renewal clauses, for example, a job order contract for Tucson Water taking care of water facilities where there's renewals? Is there some way to narrow the focus so that we can bring in that person or those people that are most familiar with those types of contracts for our benefit?
There are different procedures for... The question is, I don't know that we can make a decision ahead of time on a contract we wouldn't be interested in, or the type of contract, unless we were aware of what the approach to contracts.
So, members of the commission, I would suggest that we could have procurement come in and give an overview of the various types of contracts, a construction contract with a defined design and scope and a punch list at the end of it will be different than an ongoing service contract, which might need more monitoring on a recurring basis, where a construction contractor checking in on the phases and then punching it out at the end. So maybe an overview of those types of contracts, and then generally how procurement approaches the monitoring of those contracts, be it through construction phases or be it over years of service.
Seems reasonable to me.
Commissioner Pollack, does that meet with your request?
Oh, yeah. I think, yeah, that's a great idea to just look at it generally, and then we'll probably get an idea of if they have some different methods for the different types of contracts or dollar amounts or something. I'm not sure. Or service versus products or something.
Can we get action on this? Roll call?
Do we want to roll call that? So we are deciding whether to ask procurement to come in and give us some information on the contract process. Commissioner Rodriguez?
Yes.
Commissioner Hunter?
Yes.
Commissioner Andrews?
Aye.
Commissioner Clark?
Aye.
Commissioner Pollack? Did we lose Commissioner Pollack?
You blinked, but we didn't hear anything.
Oh, I said aye.
Oh, okay, good. I will work on getting chairman in here for the commissioners. And then real quick, Commissioner Rodriguez, members of the commissions, the update on the vacancies. last I reached out to Ward 2 and to Mayor's office, they did not. Ward 2 said they are actively searching. They did have one or two potential candidates that fell through. And then last I asked the mayor's office, I did not get a response, but I am following up with them on a semi-regular basis to keep them aware of the vacancies on this commission.
Could we ask the representatives from each of those wards to come in and tell us what they're...
I will ask them to come back. Yes, okay.
I would like to know their response.
Yes, okay.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I didn't mean to break in on the previous subject, but that would be very helpful to know. Thank you.
We've had a great deal of information also from the police department on their recruiting. Does anyone wish to present for future agenda items any further information from the police department?
Mr. Chair, I think that given questions asked by two of the commissioners, that perhaps we've looked at recruiting, and it seems as though the department recognizes some shortcomings. They're taking steps to remedy those. It sounds like the commissioners might like to know a little more about things like retention, a little bit about how the department petitions the city manager's office for pay for officers, those things that are really impacting the overall efficacy of the department and its ability to retain an effective force.
Commissioner Edwards, who would we call?
Well, I don't know if there's anyone in operations that, or even human resources, that has the ability to do exit interviews with officers that leave the department, that has some meaningful statistics about those reasons within the department that are affecting officer retention. And if it's just pay, you know, who's responsible for ultimately setting pay for officers and the progressive pay?
Someone in the city manager's office probably oversees the public safety.
That could be.
This is Commissioner Pollack. I'm surprised that Lieutenant Archibald did not mention the recent pay scale reevaluation that had taken place a few months ago and how they have raised pay. But then other cities raised it even more. But it would be good to hear from somebody what their plan is for that.
The lieutenant certainly could not make decisions on things, and I think what we want to look into is who makes the decisions.
Chairman Clark, members of the commission, probably have two items that sounds like there might be some desire to have presented to the commission. One would be how the police officer union negotiations occur. We can track down the expert in the city manager's office or business services. Sometimes the person in charge of that or that oversees it shifts, but we can track that down. Second is exit interviews, metrics on reasons that people leave or reasons that they disclose when they leave. That will probably be a different individual, probably within the police department, but we can track down that individual within the city to give you some information on that, if those two avenues are things that you want to pursue.
Commissioners?
That sounds good.
This
is Commissioner Rodriguez. I have a question, which is, I think, a larger question, and asking the commissioners how we can look more into this. Is there is no requirement for firefighters and policemen to live in the city. And I think I have some concerns about that. And then listening a little bit more to Archibald, Lieutenant Archibald, the issues still in retention, my concern about the money, $100,000. Gee, that's a lot of money. And, I'm just wondering, if that's a city council issue, requiring that, or there's no requirement of firefighters and policemen to live in the city limits.
Members of the commission, the expert on the labor negotiations, we can also put that as a bullet point. I think it's under the same umbrella as the pay and the benefits, basically, and the requirements. But I think the same individual that we bring can answer that type of question.
Great. Thank you very much.
Based on what I've heard, I'm going to suggest that you do follow through and put that on the future agenda, as you have suggested.
I have that. Yes, Chairperson Clark. So I have basically the two union negotiations, labor negotiations, somebody who can speak to that issue, and then maybe who can speak to exit interviews and reasons, more concrete reasons from officers themselves of why they are leaving our force.
I'd also like to point out to my fellow commissioners that a great number of things were expressed today that have real concern. The traffic and the ability or inability of the department to meet some of those concerns. And I think that should be kept in mind from the commissioners when we interview the people who come before us.
Okay, and I know Lieutenant Archibald did sound willing to return, you know, maybe at some future date next year sometime, maybe for some updates as well.
Any comments from the commissioners? Then I do believe we're adjourned.
All right, fantastic. You all have a wonderful evening.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.